Heroes podcast is proudly sponsored by Better Bricks and was created to help bridge the informational gaps that can occur between industry, academia, and experts in the industry doing this kind of work every single day. This podcast varies in topics per quarter and per year, generally featuring voices of industry experts and thought leaders in the fields of construction, design, technology, specialty trades, and skilled trades, as well as those who work in the humanities, energy efficiency, social science, and policy. My name is Shelby Ruiz, and I'm hosting the Building Heroes podcast for you today. I'm the research associate that helps Julia Day run the Integrated Design and Construction Lab. And today,
we are joined on the Building Heroes podcast by three wonderful and brilliant individuals. Their names are Noel Schultz, Jonas Demisi, and Chad Kruger are the founding directors of the INEF. Noel Schultz as the inaugural director, Jonas as the assistant director under engineering and the environment, and Chad as the assistant director for agriculture, extension, and outreach, combine their efforts and expertise to form the leadership team of INEF. What are each of your roles in the Institute?
Just to introduce myself, so my name is Jonas Demisi. I'm a hydrologist and an associate professor in civil and environment engineering department sitting in the WSU Tri-City campus here in Richland. I'm also an assistant director for engineering and environment for the WSU's new Clean Energy Institute, which is also known as INEF, Energy Northwest Energy Future. Just personal background, I'm originally from Ethiopia, did my bachelor degree in agricultural engineering, and then went to Belgium for my master degree in hydrology, and came to US for my PhD study in civil and environment engineering at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. After that, I was in Argonne National Lab for a postdoc and joined WSU about 10 years ago.
Yeah, that sounds great. Chad, would you want to introduce yourself next?
Yeah, thank you. I'm Chad Kruger. I'm the INEF Assistant Director for Agriculture and Extension and Outreach, and I'm faculty in the College of Agriculture, Human and Natural Resource Sciences at WSU, and I've been here a little over 20 years. My background is in the intersection of agriculture, climate, and energy, and particularly in how the agricultural industry responds to new technologies and opportunities. And personally, I'm multi-generational farm family from Washington State in both Eastern and Western Washington.
Awesome. Love to hear it. Thanks, Chad. Noel, would you like to kind of give me your title and background and then introduce what WSU Tri-Cities INEF is and trying to achieve?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Shelby. Thanks for having us on to learn more about the Institute for Northwest Energy Futures. I'm Noel Schultz, and I'm the inaugural director of the Institute for Northwest Energy Futures and also the Bob Ferguson Endowed Professor on the WSU Tri-Cities campus. I am an electrical engineer by background and taught at six different U.S. universities over the last almost 30 years. This is my ninth year at WSU, and I just recently moved to the WSU Tri-Cities campus after being in the WSU Pullman campus for 7.5 years. And my background is more about around the grid. How do we model and simulate the electric power grid? And I've done a lot of work with utilities and other aspects of kind of grid research and activities. So a little bit about the Institute for Northwest Energy Futures. And INEF, as we like to call it, shortcut for it, is really a new state-funded institute and facility that's looking to tackle the system-level challenges across the energy ecosystem. And as we see a lot of the complexities around energy, often one technology has unintended consequences for the other technologies. And one of the examples I like to use is the fact that electric vehicles, when people plug in, they just assume those are green electrons that are going to be charging their car, but someone else has to worry about those green electrons. The grid space folks have to learn that. So what we're trying to do is really look across the WSU system, as well as in the Pacific Northwest region, to look at how do we get groups together across the energy ecosystem to try to come up with solutions that are the best for multiple different groups and not be in our silos related to that. And so one of the things we're doing is we're hiring 7 new faculty across the WSU system. 5 will be located on the WSU Tri-Cities campus. And we're excited to have a new faculty member in nuclear engineering. We're also looking at some systems level activities such as techno-economics of energy. We're looking at life cycle analysis of energy technologies. We're looking at AI and data analytics of energy. And then our last position in kind of the systems is energy equity, energy justice. Our other two positions in the Pullman area are going to be looking with the School of the Environment, looking at materials that we use in different energy solutions. And then in electrical engineering, power electronics, how do we interconnect solar, wind, storage to the grid to maintain a reliable and resilient grid? And so I'm leading that effort and really working in some of the areas around power systems. I'm also doing some work in the nuclear area, and my colleagues are working in other aspects of the institute. So, Jonas, do you want to share a little bit?
Okay, thanks, Noel. Regarding my role, as I mentioned in my introductions, I am an Assistant Director for Engineering and Environment for INF, representing and leading the institute activities in these two important areas. In general, we would like the future energy source to be not only clean, but also sustainable and affordable. From our and other similar earlier studies, we already know clean energy doesn't necessarily mean sustainable based on the amount of natural resource required for a large-scale energy production. For example, the water and land need for biofuel, mining for critical materials, the need for proper recycling and disposal of some of the material used for energy production are the issues, sustainability challenge that the clean energy production currently facing. So my role is to bring this sustainability aspect to clean energy research and policy so that the future energy to be clean, environmentally friendly, economically viable, and socially equitable. So bring the sustainability and other aspect of energy related issue into our future.
My role is to facilitate engagement of the agriculture and food industry in the clean energy conversation and to help figure out how we can transition one of our largest energy using industries in Washington into the one of the largest contributors to the clean energy future. And so a little bit about where this is coming from is we produce a lot of high value fruit and vegetable crops and a lot of high value livestock products and grain products that are sent literally around the world. And our global retailers are asking our agricultural producers to reduce our carbon footprint of what we're producing. And so, an example of that recently is our apple industry has been approached to, what can they do to reduce their carbon footprint in apples? And what we found is we're really quite efficient in producing apples. We're actually pretty good at it. And so part of the solution to going towards, say, zero carbon piece of fruit really has to come in from an energy perspective. So where we're currently using energy for pumping water, for fuel in the orchard, and for cold storage of that fruit, we need to figure out what are solutions to what are currently not necessarily clean energy solutions there, but we could have those in the future.
Yeah, and thank you guys for really unpacking what each of you do individually and collectively as a group. I'm really excited about this conversation to cross-examine how everybody works together to achieve this really big grand challenge of a clean energy future. What do you think that INEF's role in our region when it comes to resources at a really local level or energy and climate? What are some other kinds of projects that you guys are working on in INEF to tackle that?
Well, I'll start a little bit to talk about one of the things we're seeing in the WSU Tri-Cities area in particular is a history related to the nuclear industry. And then we're seeing more now related to the new nuclear industry as well as fusion energy. And recently there's been an announcement of a new small modular reactor that Amazon is supporting in the Tri-Cities area. So one of the projects I'm working on is looking at both the educational side of nuclear safety. How do we make sure we have a workforce that can help operate these new nuclear plants? But also, how do we work around innovation? And so we have a large project working on to create kind of an innovation hub in the nuclear and fusion spaces to leverage what we're already doing in the Tri-Cities area on nuclear and take that to the next level. And, making sure we're doing it in the Pacific Northwest as well. It's starting in the Tri-Cities, but it's really an effort across both Idaho and the state of Washington to see and be a leader in some of the space of nuclear. And, nuclear is a really important aspect as we talk about energy because of a lot of the renewable energy sources are intermittent. We don't control them. So nuclear energy and also opportunities related to hydrogen, which are a little further out, are really going to help us maintain that reliable and resilient grid that we need for a lot of different activities. So one of our key activities is in the nuclear space. And Chad and can talk a little bit about agriculture, and then Jonas maybe about some of the water related projects.
Yeah, so the agricultural system in central Washington co-evolved with our energy system development in the state, particularly the hydro system. And I think the reason that we're known as one of the key fruit and vegetable producing regions of the world is because of the abundance of water and clean energy necessary to support irrigation, food processing and packing, and cold storage. And so that connection with abundant clean water and energy is a big part of why we have what we have. It's also a big part of why the rest of the world is looking at us in the Northwest as a place that's going to become more important in the future. As you look at a warming climate and some of the challenges that are going to hit other key food producing regions of the world, we actually look pretty good and pretty well insulated from some of the worst of that. And so I think the demand on our water and energy systems in the Northwest is going to increase because of the opportunity that our region has to continue to be and growing a leading food producing region. And therefore, if we're going to achieve that at the same time that we're trying to also achieve all of the other clean energy goals, clean water goals, we need to be thinking about how agriculture co-evolves into the future with energy systems and becomes more of a producer of energy, does a better job of using energy. And then, things like Noel talked about earlier, if we're going to plug in all the hybrid electric vehicles and expect that that's clean electrons, well, just at the same time, we're going to be trying to look at, electrifying big parts of agriculture that are currently dependent on fuels. And so, how do we do that at the same time that we're also trying to do it for the transportation system? We've got significant competing demands that, if we're not thinking about this carefully, are only competing. But if we start thinking about them together and how can these be put together, they could actually be complementary in terms of achieving a future energy transition.
Yeah, and Chad, can I piggyback on that really quickly before I let Jonas talk about some hydrology projects that you have going on? Chad, I think this is really interesting and reminds me of a project that was mentioned at the INEF Summit in October. I've seen this in a number of different applications, being a gardener myself, but can you speak to the project where you're hoping to put solar panels above different kinds of agricultural applications?
Yeah, so this is one of the first big projects under INEF is we've received a grant from the State Department of Commerce to demonstrate deployment of solar panels over apple orchards. And we call this agrivoltaics. It's been done around the world. It's a big opportunity, but it's also been somewhat controversial. And part of the controversy comes from the idea that, deploying solar in what otherwise would be agricultural production areas can come across as kind of displacement of farming and ranching activities. But there are some really compelling opportunities where solar can be deployed over the top of some farming activities. and actually provides significant benefit to the crop or livestock system because those panels can provide some shade, which reduces abiotic stress. And so the project we're working on is we're going to deploy solar over apple production systems and look at this question of does providing that shade during the really hot periods of the year where the fruit needs to be shaded or you need to use a lot of water for evaporative cooling in order to reduce what we call abiotic stress, which essentially is a physical damage that happens to the apples in the orchard. We know from prior research that shading and evaporative cooling can reduce significant amount of crop loss and improve crop quality. Well, if we can do that by deploying solar panels, then we don't have to use a lot of water. We don't have to use shade netting. We can actually use something that's also producing clean energy. And if we have to, if we need tens of thousands of acres covered with solar panels to meet our clean energy goals, wouldn't it be better if those tens of thousands of acres were dual use, where there was a mutual benefit for the crops and livestock, as well as energy production? And it's not a situation where we're displacing one thing for another thing. The other piece of this is, as I mentioned, retailers are asking our producers to reduce their carbon footprints. Well, we can do a little bit more to make our crop production a little bit cleaner, but really we're already pretty good at what we do. And so in order for us to get to the place where we could be, zero carbon fruit or zero carbon potatoes, we really need to come in with some alternative energy, clean energy systems into those production systems. And solar in the orchard or vineyard may be the quickest to get significant progress in terms of clean energy implemented into agricultural systems.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Chad, for the really exciting. I'm excited about that project personally, but this episode is also coming off the curtails of a conversation we had recently about smart pumps and water systems, and I'm sure that that feeds into this agricultural and energy conversation as well. Jonas, why don't you expand on some of the projects and works that you're focusing on right now and this energy water nexus?
Okay, thank you. First, I would like to highlight how important water is when it comes to energy production. So, particularly in our region, I think Chad and Noel already highlight some of this importance in our region and state. It's really fair to say water and energy are two sides of the same coin. We get about 60 to 70% of our electricity from hydropower. So, it will be difficult to see energy and water as two separate entities. Rather, they are highly interconnected. Just to give you another example and maybe emphasize this relationship, majority of the water withdrawal in the US are not for irrigation, but ra is rather for cooling thermal plants. And also, significant energy is needed to treat and distribute potable water in towns and cities, which I think is account about 40% of the total energy used by the cities and towns. So it's not just water is needed for energy, but we need also significant amount of energy again to distribute the water to the point of usage. Drought can cause significant decrease in the energy generation, like what we have been seeing in the southwestern US, or power outage can also make major issues when it comes to supplying drinking water, as we saw recently in Texas. So they are really interconnected system. So understanding this interconnection is a first important step to meet the increasing clean energy needs in the future. So my research is focusing on understanding this interconnectedness. So it varies from region to region. It varies over time. So how our energies and water are interconnected, the different sources of energies are interconnected. I'm looking into the water footprint of emerging clean energy sources like the hydrogen energy, how much energy will be used under a different production scenario. So it's better to have that good understanding how much resource will be needed to meet the energy productions. I'm looking into the future water demands increase, or how does this demand changes with a potential increase in different clean energy productions, increase in irrigation, and impact of climate change. We do stream temperature studies. Again, this might be related to water storage for hydro, water use for irrigation, return flows, and so on. How does that affect stream temperature, and then at the end, ultimately affect the aquatic in our river system? I study the trade-off, again, meeting the competing demands for relatively scarce water resource. So what will be, how does this trade-off play off? Again, in different region, even if my study emphasizes in the Pacific Northwest, I also have some research in Africa.
Wow, thank you. That was very comprehensive of all the work that you do. And we keep coming back to this idea that our food and our energy and our water are all combined. And I think, you know, as a society, we know that, but there's a huge social disconnect. We have to target people who aren't building and energy experts in order to deliver our message. But like energy, I think we're all very disconnected from where our food comes from and where our energy comes from. Noel, do you want to unpack that idea a little bit more and talk about how interconnected all of these aspects of our life are and how important they are to maintain and steward?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Shelby. So, you know, we talk a lot about the food, energy, water nexus and the combination of that. And there's just so much interaction. And just to use the example of, even as we see climate change changing how much water we get, how much rain we get versus snow. And one of the things the Pacific Northwest has, which is a huge energy battery, is our snowpack. And so the great thing about that snowpack is it falls in November, December, January, February, March, but then it melts and it comes through and can provide both irrigation as well as go through the dams in July and August. And as we see the snowpack decrease, when it rains, it ends up that the water then goes through the rivers and the dams in, say, April or May instead of later in that time when we have drier conditions in Washington, where we have the need for more energy for the air conditionings across the state. And so one of the things when one activity impacts the other activity, kind of like we were talking about at the beginning, is sometimes we're working in our silos and we're worried about, okay, what's happening in the energy space? What's happening in the water space? But there's so much interplay between the food, energy, water nexus that we really need to study it as a system. And we need to understand, because one of the things that by changing one thing in the food area or in the water in or energy, it could impact the other two aspects of that. And part of what that goes kind of back to, how do we provide non-technical information to or to provide information about some of these topics to non-technical audiences? And you know, we can talk as faculty, we can talk about a lot of different words and a lot of different research posters and presentations. But as we talk about these needs in the food, energy, water nexus, we really need to be able to help the public understand that. So whether it's conservation, and I know energy efficiency is one of the things you talk about, but in, you know, we've seen in the past couple of years where utilities have come out and said, hey, we don't have enough electrons right now. If you can reduce your, or even natural gas in a case of winter, if you can reduce your consumption, then that's going to help the overall needs and understanding that. But the having the public be able to understand how to do that most effectively and how maybe to not impact their lives and what they're doing as much as it could be in the fact of a possible blackout or other issues that may come out in the energy space. So it really is a combination of a lot of interplay between the food, energy, and water. And we want to make sure, as I said earlier, when we change one thing, we don't negatively impact one of the other parts of this nexus.
Excellent. Thank you for that. I'm very proud of the fact that our university is a land grant institution. What does that look like as far as our use of extension to actually reach those communities in general practice or examples, maybe.
I'll take that one, Shelby. So part of my role is actually to be kind of the key conduit to our extension system, and I do have an extension appointment, and I've always had one as long as I've been at WSU. There's a lot of opportunity here where extension engages on behalf of the university with the public. And some of those cases are very industry focused, like in agriculture, where we work hand in hand with our agricultural industries. And in other cases, it's much more community based, where it's either economic development work or connecting with families and students and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of opportunity here, and a couple of early things that we are connecting with is agricultural extension in the perspective of looking at the solar project we've talked about. Also, there's some work that we've been doing through INEF around what we call ag symbiosis, which is the idea that you can take the waste materials from one agricultural or food processing business and use those as the inputs to another food processing business, and potentially even reduce costs or increase new revenue streams that can make both the materials and energy and water savings happen and carbon savings happen, but also potentially make more money. And a lot of the time, that's about introducing industry stakeholders to opportunities that they might not know about. So if you're a potato producer or a French fry facility, you may not know of the opportunities that exist in another part of the industry that if you co-located facilities that you're both looking at, you could actually be feeding each other. So, you know, there's some opportunities, and we did a project looking at producing a report for the legislature looking at current work and opportunities for these ag symbiosis projects within Washington State. And a lot of those are around the Tri-Cities area where there's a lot of development in agriculture. Another project that we're just starting to get rolling is I'm partnering with the WSU Extension Forestry team to engage forest landowners in some work around potential for biofuel supply in the state and region. And that's something that Department of Energy at the federal level has had, you know, visions for the potential of biofuel production ultimately going towards sustainable aviation fuel, and have looked at the potential biomass resources that could be supplied for that. But unfortunately, even though there's a lot of incentive and interest there in building out those biofuel resources, we haven't seen the supply side come along at the pace that we'd like to. And we think that our extension connections with the communities and people who own a lot of the forest lands could be valuable in terms of conversations with those individuals and communities through extension, in terms of better understanding why they aren't necessarily supplying biomass for biofuels, but what could change the equation for them in terms of being willing partners in supplying biomass for biofuels.
Thank you for that, Chad. What should our industry listeners look out for from INEF? What opportunities are there to engage, or what can, your everyday design build contractor contribute to this effort where you're actually addressing some really big challenges?
Yeah, I think Shelby, one of the things as I think about your audience and the industrial listeners is one of the important things we see a lot of talk about new generation and how do we get more electrons. And one area that really the construction folks have led in is energy efficiency and looking at some of these aspects as we look at LEDs, as we look at different materials, related to windows that, are more energy efficient. And so I think it's important for folks in this area to think about how do they continue to educate the folks they're working with in building buildings or homes. So talk about those energy savings in a way that helps them understand they're part of the solution to this energy ecosystem that we're doing because they're helping decrease the amount of load that we have related to working with the energy efficiency. And then obviously the other big area that we probably see a lot related to just energy is solar. and the opportunities related to solar in some of the building construction, and in some areas it's required that you have solar now for both commercial and residential houses and some of that. So I think those are some areas that I really feel INEF can help provide experts to help kind of talk about the different aspects of how the solar is integrated and what are some of the things to think about in working with different materials. We also have folks across INEF that are working in different materials. And I don't think I've mentioned yet, but we have about 26 different entities, including your own, across WSU that work on some aspect of energy. And everything from nuclear and grids. Chad's talked a lot about some of the agricultural side, sustainable aviation fuels or something. So I think as the land grant, as you mentioned, we really are about helping across the state and across the country in helping to find these solutions and have helping to work on these solutions, not just in the laboratory, but getting them out and implemented in different activities. So I really think it's an opportunity for your listeners to, as we grow, as INEF grows, we're about a year and a half old in our majority of our funding. As we continue, we really want to be a partner. This isn't about just WSU or INEF, but it's really about partnering. And I think that's where the system aspect comes in, is not considering one part of it, but as we get all the right people around the table to be able to talk about, well, how does this impact me, what you're talking about with your technology, and make sure that everyone kind of understands. And the analysis I use on this one to get back to electric vehicles is electric vehicles, a lot of the charging stations were done based on transportation routes, right? Interstates. But unfortunately, where those places make sense, the grid is not very strong in order to support those charging. So there was kind of a disconnect between the grid folks and the EVs related to that. And so I think it's important we have people together early on in the process of some of these technologies as they're evolving to make sure we're considering all the different aspects of those technologies. So, you know, I think we're here to partner. INEF also feels like we are a resource to help connect people, not just with INEF, but across the WSU system and get the right people in the room to help folks as they have questions about technologies, as they have questions about materials, as they have questions about energy efficiency and what are some of the different aspects of that.
Thank you for all of that, Noel. That was very, very in depth. And I think you brought up a few really good points of preparing for the future and understanding all of the complexities that that involves. I want to kind of close on a final note of this brings up a lot of maybe professional development opportunities. What does the workforce and training aspect of INEF include?
Well, I'll start with that and let my colleagues add to that. I think that's really a vision for INEF is to try to be able to find out where are those gaps of knowledge that are out there and how do we pull together the right people to provide that training related to what I would call current professionals, but also to make sure we're preparing the next generation of professionals to think about this systems approach and try to come in thinking more system level rather than our silos to start off with. So they're asking some of the right questions along the way and make sure they have the right team members there. But it's definitely a place that there's an opportunity. We have, you know, partners such as PNNL that work in this space as well. And we're trying to work with them and others that to get really where are those places that we can do more. One of the things PNNL has is the grid storage launch pad where they're looking at future storage on the power grid. And we're talking to them right now about what kind of training do we need to share with people about as you put batteries in homes and other places, what are the impacts for first responders? What are the impacts for operations? And so we're talking about how do we get that information out to the right people? So WSU, you know, with our educational mission, and, you know, even when we talk about extension, it's really about taking the technology and getting it out in the field and useful for the people that need that. And sometimes that is also training with these new technologies as people didn't have that training in the background because it's a newer technology. So how do we provide, whether it's certificates, whether it's short courses, some of those different resources to help people get up to speed in that new technology, not feel they have to go back and get a whole degree in the area.
Okay, just to add on what Noel said, I think there are several opportunities that INF engage with the industries. It's one of them is we are currently forming advisory groups, mostly coming from industry working groups, and other engagement opportunities such as seminar series, workshops, and other activity just to bring together this different perspective related to our future energy. So this include the tribal members, minority issues, and so on. So try to make sure we are not just driving one side of the issue, but try to, it's, we are not the one who are on the driving seat, but we try to bring groups, researcher, practitioner from industry, so to come up with to address this energy challenge we have. We have a community room in our building that community can use it anytime they want, just again to facilitate this interaction between different groups. Currently, we are running the Energy Ambassador program for undergrad, and this program is meant to connect mentor from industry with undergrad student. And then we are in the process of also having some certificate program, as Shelby, you are mentioning. This might be another golden opportunity for the industry groups to take from INF. So there are other activities again related to workforce development, including curriculum development, which may come down the road. But we tried another angle is internship for summer is also some of the activities that we hope the industry will benefit or our student.
And I'll weigh in on that from an agricultural industry perspective that, it used to be a farmer or rancher, you needed some knowledge on soils and crops and a little bit of knowledge on, how to keep your tractors running. But that's not the case anymore. That we're at a point where our agricultural systems are very complex. They're evolving. And the need for continuing education, the need for different types of skills and preparation educationally involved is really expanding to where the jobs in the agricultural world are quite complex. And I think that surprises people who you just think about what do you need to do to farm and ranch, but we have everything that virtually every other industry, everything from computer science and engineering to marketing and economics and business management, all involved in agriculture. And so when you bring people in a workforce that's so diverse and so broad, and then you're trying to integrate new ideas, new technology, there's always a need for education, whether those are formal degree programs, certificate programs and trainings, or even just kind of meetings in industry where you're sharing and giving updates on the latest technologies, the latest things that are happening. There's an invaluable investment of education that needs to happen to facilitate the clean energy transformation in agriculture.
I completely agree. Thank you for that, Chad and Jonas and Noel. I think we can probably wrap it up here, but I'm guessing or at least hopeful that our listeners are inspired and wanting to reach out to you guys to either engage or offer internships or just learn a little bit more about what you guys do. Where would a good avenue for that be? Would that be on your website? Noel, maybe would you like to share how we can get in touch with you if people have questions?
Yes, so our website, if you do a search on WSU INEF, you will come to our website. And then our email is tricities.INEF@wsu.edu. So that's TRICITIES www.inef@wsu.edu. So that comes to all of us, and we can get back with people and if they have questions or suggestions or ideas. And as Jonas mentioned, we're looking for industrial advisory board and partners in a lot of these activities were mentioned by both Chad and Jonas as my and myself. So as people have ideas or suggestions, or if they're looking and saying, hey, does someone at WSU do this or do that? And they're not sure in the energy space, they can feel free to reach out. And we will, if it's not under what we do, we will work to try to find the right people across the WSU system to help in that particular area.
Awesome. Thank you guys for being on the podcast with me today and sharing all of the wonderful things that you guys are up to, both collectively and individually. Would each of you have something to share to kind of close and conclude your thoughts?
I'll start this. Food is energy. And so when we think about energy and we think about food, we got to think about them together.
I share the same. I will replace food with water. So water is part of the energy. And sustainability shouldn't be treated as an afterthought or a secondary concern, but rather as an integral and proactive part of planning, decision making, and implementation process of clean energy. When sustainability is addressed as a reactive measure, it often leads to inefficiency, high future cost, and unintended consequence.
And I'll just add, I think it's a great time to be in the energy space. There's just so much going on. I like to say it's job security because there's lots going on and there are career opportunities ahead. So just encourage people to think about how they continue to learn because it is changing. There are opportunities to get continuing education so that we can solve these problems together. As a system, and making sure we're coming up with what the global solution for everyone instead of different parts or silos.
So thank you three for being here today. I always like to mention that this podcast is sponsored by the Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance, who also tackles these very large, complicated
Interrelationships
interrelationships
between
between
energy.
energy in our everyday lives. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you for having us, Shelby.
Same. Thank you, Shelby, for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Shelby, and thanks for getting the word out about energy efficiency and some of the great things WSU is doing.
You can find Building Heroes on anywhere that you stream podcasts or music, including Apple, Google, Spotify, and you can find us on RSS. All of our companion documents are available to anybody who is listening on our website at idcl.wsu.edu/building-heroes-podcast.